Hi, welcome to this edition of TechNet Radio. I'm your host, Tommy Patterson, Senior Technical Evangelist out of the Southeast in the U.S. Today, joining me, Matt Hester, a peer of mine out of Texas. Matt, welcome to the show.
Howdy, how are y'all doing? Hoping everybody's having a great day. We got an exciting topic today. Tommy, what are we going to talk to the folks about? Because I'm just like Tommy mentioned, I'm an IT pro evangelist based in the South here in Texas.
Yeah, so application access in a holistic way. We've got Azure AD, remote app, some VDI. What other stuff are we going to talk about, Matt?
Well, yeah, you hit the big ones, but it's also talking about when we have this conversation, you know, people might think, well, they're Microsoft people. They're just going to talk about Microsoft technologies. Even though my camera might flake out a bit, you'll see me hold an iPad, and that the solutions that we do with this really enable a BYOD type of scenario, that we're not just talking about app delivery down to Windows devices, although, as you and I will both agree, that's probably the best experience that we can give our users from a Windows desktop perspective. But what if you have that iPad that wants to run Internet Explorer or Microsoft Word and you don't have it loaded locally? We can help you do those types of things through technologies like Azure Remote App and those types of really new things that are coming on. So we have a lot of exciting stuff, folks. If you haven't checked out our remote application capabilities in a while, you're kind of in for a treat today.
Sweet. All right. So I don't think we're going to do any slides today, or maybe we'll do a few slides, but let's go ahead and dive into that, shall we?
Yeah, definitely. So Tommy, we talked a little bit about when you were introduction, all the different topics we're going to kind of discuss today, and they really, at all their own individual levels, enable BYOD, allowing people to bring their own devices to access your applications. And really the trick here is to try to get those applications still in our infrastructure, still in our back end, so that people have to come to us, and it makes our data management easier, it makes our application management and patching easier, and there's lots of solutions for this. Now, a couple key things that we can do for this. When we look from an on-prem type of solution, this is all going to be powered by remote desktop services, or RDS. For those of you that haven't played with Server 2012 or 2012 R2, you might have known this as its prior name, which was Terminal Services. So really, we're talking about session virtualization, but really it has evolved over the years to something that's even more robust, where we can deliver full desktops via VDI, or virtual desktop infrastructure. Those are the types of things that we can do today that are built on our servers. So how do we take it to the next level? And really, when you look at our solutions from a Microsoft perspective, that's where the cloud gets involved. And we have two kind of ways we can do that. One is Office 365. If you're looking to do a lot of BYOD and your primary workload is going to be the Office applications for your organization, Office 365 could be a viable alternative for you. I thought it was very interesting, Tommy, when we released Office 365, especially for the iOS and in the App Store, it became the number one downloaded app in Apple's history. So it tells you that people really like these apps. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Yeah, and you know, to take it further than that, once you're into Office 365, you've already got an Azure AD system in place. Most people don't even know that. So, you know, from a client perspective, it's really cool. From an application permissions perspective, it's even cooler to me, right? Yep. So, very holistic.
And you hit it on the nail on the head. You were talking about some of the stuff you're doing in your home lab about with that one identity that you have that can get you everything. Because really, when you look at a BYOD type of scenario, folks, it used to be, I got to worry about that device, and I got to worry about that device, and I got to worry about that. And really, it's the BYOD is kind of baked into all the different technologies we have out there today, but it all starts with that one user ID and password and how we gave them access. And then it doesn't matter what device they come in, as long as they have a valid user ID or credential, then we can enable application management, we can enable database management. It really starts with being people-centric when you start thinking about this. And it's a big mind shift that we've had in the industry over the last couple of years that we have. So when you think about this, and you can work with these types of devices, we have a lot of solutions. So the first one I want to kind of jump into is, Tommy, I know you like this area as much as I do, is VDI. And what this basically is, folks, is that somebody says, I want to have the full Windows desktop via a remote session. So think of the Windows operating system as the application that you're virtualizing across that desktop. Now, it actually uses using Hyper-V under the covers to actually deliver a full-blown Windows desktop to a thin client or a client that's there. Now, what's nice about this, to the average user, folks, they won't even know that they're getting a virtual desktop, that it's there. But when a lot of customers talk to me about virtual desktop, and Tommy, let me know if you have the same kind of experience, they really don't mean VDI, because VDI is a big solution, folks. It's a very possible solution. It's fairly straightforward to get it going, but this is a big thing that you're giving to your organization. When in reality, if you're saying, well, hey, I just need this one app, and this one app worked on Windows 7, I want to do a VDI for Windows 7. Well, wait a second, have we looked at just that application? Tommy, are you seeing the same kind of things?
Yeah, and you get into how should we publish? Is it per app? Is it a multiple apps? Is there some type of oversight needed for, you know, how many of these desktops do I have out there? Or how many do I think I'm going to be deploying? Well, what we found, you know, with deploying anything web-based, you know, from going from a migration from an internal application that's on a server to migrating to a web-based solution or a cloud-based solution, you don't necessarily know what that demand's going to be once the application works really well from anywhere in that BYOD perspective. So when you start looking at the different ways to do it, you really need to start thinking about if this explodes, if this in growth, I mean, not like explodes in a bad way, if it explodes in growth, how am I going to handle that growth? What is the best infrastructure? And that's kind of how I start out those conversations when customers come talk to me.
Yep, and how we scale that out. And as you can see, this is all powered by 2012. And they mentioned a couple things there about session virtualization versus pooled VMs versus personal VMs. And folks, we're not diving into VDI today. I know there's some great MVA courses out there that will get you some links that you want to go take a look at. But really, it comes down to how much cost effective you're going to be, how personalized you want to make the experience, do you want kind of shared desktops with those types of things. They all kind of have their advantage. But once again, you got to look at what you're trying to solve. And the problem that you're trying to solve for is really going to kind of dictate which of these solutions you go down and which is going to be the right path for you and your organization. And once again, it could be something, okay, for this workload, it makes sense to go with personal VMs for that group of folks. But for this group of folks over here, maybe a pooled VM or a session virtualization is going to be the right choice. So when you're looking at these types of VDI architectures and you're looking at making some of these differences between personal pooled VMs, you might even be able to inside your organization kind of have that split brain of which is going to be the best for you, which is going to be the best for the workload, which is going to be the best for that user that's actually coming in the environment. Once again, looking at the users to kind of help you solve some of these complex problems we have to be able to give those types of applications down to the environment. The other technology we have, and this one's been around for a while, we've had a lot of solutions around this, and I remember the good old days of terminal services and setting those things up, and they've gotten so much better, especially from an installation server perspective. A remote app basically lets me take apps and send it to a user's desktop, and it shows up on their desktop as a application, and they open it up. They probably won't even know it's running remotely. Or you can even configure it if they double-click on let's say you're virtualizing PowerPoint and they double-click on a PowerPoint presentation, it's going to open up PowerPoint as if it's natively there. So it's a way that we can kind of trick the users, per se, in thinking they really have an application, but actually deliver it remotely and enable those types of scenarios. And you can do all kinds of things that are here. And this is just built in to Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2. And it really gives you what is called, one of the things that we stress about this is a rich user experience. And really, folks, all that really means is that this looks like it's running natively, that to the average user, they think this application is installed locally, but in reality, it's installed on our backend, so we can actually control that. But if it's a touch-enabled type of device, if it's those types of things, it all has that kind of look and feel. So I like to think of it's a Jedi mind trick for your users. Like, yes, you really do have that application on your desktop, but at the end of the day, they don't, and it's being managed by us on our backend. So when you see some of the things, Tommy, what are some of the applications that you've seen done really well that kind of surprise that you were virtualized?
Yeah, so I was on a project where basically we needed to have a bunch of legal representatives reviewing documents. And so they would go through and they would try to look at the VDI, look into how can we give these sets of users, and this was very dynamically set up with a bunch of users all at one time and then it would go away. How can we do that? Right. And that was back when I was doing consulting years ago. And this is without the immersive experience of touch. Right. So we're going through and we're doing the project. And, you know, one of the things they really wanted to be able to do was publish an app inside of those virtual desktops really quickly with just a change and then blow it out to all the different desktops that were, you know, for like users. Then we ran into the challenge of, well, they have all different hardware at every one of these different facilities. And so we had to start thinking about, you know, what scale do we use for the screen, and what's the bandwidth look like, and how much processing power do we need per each one of these applications or desktops. And it just got to be where, as we tried to work through those things, the project became an animal, right? I mean, that was what we knew we were kind of biting into. But at the same time, if I were to do it now with this rich user experience, whole different perspective. I mean, I have so many ways of doing it, and it scales out to whatever screen size you're using. Plus, it works with a touch. And so all those different pieces are taken away and given to the user to feel like it's present on my system right now. And that could be an iPad or, you know, Android tablet or whatever that we're presenting with. But if you're on, say, a Windows RT or which is the non-pro version of 8, the same experience as you get as with a Windows 8 Pro machine, Windows 8.1. And we'll continue on with that in Windows 10, right? I'm hoping. Yeah. That's in preview, so we'll see. But that's what I'm seeing, Matt, and I hear a lot of, there's a lot of third-party chatter, and that's a good thing to me. I like it when I go to a user group and I see people chatting about the third-party apps they're using in to manage VDI or to ascertain what their VDI footprint could look like. When I see third-party applications on the rise for a given technology, say remote app or VDI for Server 2012, that tells me there's an adoption there. That tells me there's a skill set as an IT pro I should go grab and make sure it's on my resume. So good stuff.
Yeah, and especially when you look at a lot of our partners, they may even enable some of the things to the non-Microsoft platforms like the Android and like the iPad or even the iOS devices a little bit more natively than we can do built in, but we have a lot of those capabilities put in. And you mentioned a key topic there. We talk about bandwidth and all this. Is everybody's like, okay, this is going to cost a lot, and really it doesn't. We're talking about the RDP protocol, which is a fairly thin and lightweight protocol streaming this information. You're basically sending screenshots across the wire and not the full rich data that's there. Speaking right. of graphics and the screenshots, one of the things that we introduced into our server platform a couple years ago was RemoteFX, and I believe it was with Server 2008 R2 SP1 is when we first introduced this. But it takes kind of graphic, it takes remote desktop virtualization to another level. And what RemoteFX allows us to do is do a concept called graphic rasterization, which is one of my favorite terms in all of computing, that and primordial pool, which is a whole other topic. But when we look at RemoteFX, think about hardware virtualization for a second. You think about, we can virtualize memory and we can virtualize CPUs, but have you ever, Tommy, when you bought a server, have you ever cared about what video cards in that server?
Never,
right? You standard, or it's a rack, right? And it doesn't have a video card.
Right. And we should tell them too, Matt, the RDP that we're talking about, this is a new release of RDP. Yep. If you tried RDP 5 years ago and you thought it wasn't thin enough, try the new RDP. RDP, very much, you know, a lot faster, and the RemoteFX capabilities are just, you know, kick ass. So
amazing. And what's great about this, as Tommy mentioned, and probably you all listen to this, have never worried about a video card in a server. Well, I don't know if you've bought a video card recently, Tommy, but they're practically computers in of them themselves that do one thing and one thing extremely well. Frames per second, right? That's, you know, make the video go fast. They're lots of money. But how many of you have that one user in your organization that does all the CAD and CAM, does all the video processing, does all the high-end intense graphic and processing, and you bought them a $10,000 or $10,000-plus dollar desktop to do that type of solution on? Well, and most of that money that he probably invested on a desktop wasn't processing power or memory. It was probably the video processing, the video card or video cards they put inside of it. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that we can actually do is, if you have a high-end video card, and we have a list of ones that are officially supported by Windows Server, and yes, I said server and video card in the same sentence, you can actually take that investment now and put those video cards in your servers and do virtualization processing of the GPUs, the graphic processing units that are on those video chips, and essentially give those remote desktops or give those sessions a graphic card. So to the user, once again, they might be on a system that really doesn't do a lot of high-end graphics, but they need to do a high-end graphic type of thing, and we can actually do this type of experience built into our Windows technologies. And it really leverages the power of not only being able to virtualize desktops or virtualize an application, but also virtualize graphics on the back end. So now, Tommy, you might actually have to start worrying about what kind of video card do we throw into that server to help up serve up some of these scenarios that we don't have to go buy that specialized desktop for that user. Once again, right. That user needs that workload. People-centric IT, we control all those resources in our back end infrastructure, and we can distribute them out to the folks that need them when they need them. So we're not just doing those point solutions for those different types of devices.
Right. And folks also know that if you don't have one of these cards in your server, the software GPU does kick in and work just fine. Just know that it is hitting your normal CPUs when it's doing the work. So just want to make sure you're clear on that. You don't have to go out and buy 3D cards right now, but it might be a good idea if you're going down this this path.
Oh, but they all need video cards. Come on now, we got to test all those applications, like, you know, Halo for the desktop and all the video right on the surface, right? Isn't that right. A valid test? Anyways, you know, I joke about that, but if you can get a modern video game running on anything through this RemoteFX, folks, you can pretty much throw anything at it, because the video games are so video intensive.
If you do, folks, let me know and we'll do a blog post on it.
Yeah, we'll do a blog post.
Reach out to me and we'll do a blog post.
Tommy and I are available to travel on as long as you pay our T&E to ever come out and help test those types of solutions. And at the end of the day, rich user experience really gets even better with RemoteFX and the types of things that we can do. We can do these across WANs and LANs. And when it first came out, we were kind of constrained to what we do on an on-prem solution. But this just makes that whole experience even better and more robust. I remember when we first introduced some of these things, you could do glass on a glass type of environment and really make people think the app was running natively. But we've taken remote apps and remote virtualization to the next level. And as most of you know, we have a nice public cloud platform out there called Azure. It's currently in preview, but we actually have a remote app. And now what this is that same kind of remote app virtualization we have on-prem with Server 2012 R2, but put inside of Azure and put inside of our cloud infrastructure. So from your perspective, one of the benefits that most scenarios in the cloud have, you don't have to worry about the hardware or the infrastructure. We have this all up. Now, it's still in preview. I think they just released some articles recently. We'll make sure there's some links at the end of this interview where you can go find out. I think they're starting to announce pricing and those types of things. So it's still something you can try and take a look at and see how it works. It's there, but you get the advantage of a cloud technology and being able to deliver those apps that are there from a scaling. It can enable applications from anywhere. It gives you single sign-on or same sign-on depending on how you're doing your federation. That's all there. So I'm actually going to hop out of my slide presentation for a moment, and I'm actually going to show you this of what this looks like and how this works inside of our environment. So if we see this from a client perspective, they're actually going to get this little client right here, as you can see our environment. They're actually going to get this client, and it allows us to see what's there we can deliver. Now, I've only delivered some of the basic Microsoft core apps, so maybe you don't want to do Office 365 but still want to deploy that. A lot of this is built into the preview, and as I, an admin, can actually invite people to do app invitations where I can actually come in and get those invitations and see if there's any additional workloads that I have the ability to do this. Now, what's nice about this client, Tommy, there's an Apple version, there's an, I believe, an Android version, and of course, there's a Windows version of this client right now to be able to do this remote app. But this is all done up in Azure, how we do this. Let me switch over to my my Azure portal for a second. You actually see this. Right now, I currently have a remote app collection called Ram Hester, and you actually get the URL that's automatically published for that. I'm going to go ahead and hop into this so you can see some of the details of how this works. Now, you'll see that I have already published programs. I've already configured user access. And the first time you come into this, that's how you get to it. But the nice thing about this, folks, whether you're using your remote app or my remote app, the URL that we all have is the same. It'll all be remoteapp.windowsazure.com that we come to. And once again, what's going to be the differentiator here? The user ID and password is going to take the folks into your Azure subscriptions and your Azure environments to actually be able to work with these types of things. It makes it very, very easy for us to kind of publish applications. So now, I will warn you, since we are in preview, and as Tommy will well testify, that sometimes, I looked at this yesterday and a few days before, sometimes the portal changes on us, and we don't have any control, so there might be some new things in here as we go through it. So if I say, let's publish remote app programs, it's actually going to take me to the remote app selection to allow me to publish the different types of apps. Now, most of these apps are here are ones that are already pre-canned that are available for me to publish. But that's not a limitation of the preview. That's just currently what's in this current screen. What I have the ability to do is go to the publishing tab. And in the publishing tab, I see all those same apps that have already been published. But now I can click on publish, and it allows me to publish start menu programs or publish programs using a path. So what if I have my custom line of business app that I want to be able to publish? As long as you have those paths, and there's some requirements, and once again, we'll get you some good documentation of where they are, but it gives me the ability to deliver those into Azure, and then Azure will deliver them out to the clients. So Tommy, have you had anybody been wowed by this so far? Because when I showed this to folks, you're like, wait, that's the whole infrastructure built into the cloud, and they're pretty impressed by it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as we get this more fine-tuned, being able to upload your own images with your own custom apps, that's something people have been wanting, right? And they were doing it, but they weren't doing it this seamless, where they were having to upload a server image, create their own server in a virtual machine in Azure, and then publish the app, say, the normal way, right, through remote desktop or remote sessions through Server 2012. But now this is built then directly into the UI of Azure, so we can just publish apps directly off of an image or a path or a start menu program that's already in the existing image for server and go. And they did just release pricing. I saw some stuff out there, and that looked really good. So take a look there. And I'm sure we're going to have a lot of new MVA content coming soon. So.
Yeah, and it's an amazing kind of world. And then what you can also see is currently what sessions are available to you and who's currently active in your sessions. Now, just like we have the ability inside of remote sessions, and I'll zoom in here in the bottom of my screen, you have the ability to log that user off, disconnect them, or just send them a message. So I'm going to go ahead and just click them and send a message just to show you this hopefully is going to fully work for me. I'm going to send and go ahead into the selected users and just say hello. I know it's not very inventive. And you know what, since everybody knows that I already am, I'm just going to say go Buckeyes. I might make a lot of people mad with that statement, especially down here in this part of the country. But I'm going to go ahead and send it. And then hopefully, it's actually going to go to two things. And now what I'm going to do here is I'm going to switch over, and I'm going to show you what this looks like actually coming up on my iPad. So Tommy, I talked about at the end of that when we closed that down, how that works, and I actually sent the message off to the user that's currently on my iPad. Now, I know the screen reflection might be bad, but if we zoom in, you might be able to see it says, hello. And go Buckeyes, although it's a little blurry, and you kind of see the reflection on my screen. But in case you're wondering, this is an iPad, folks. This is not a Microsoft service that I've kind of hidden, that it's there. So we actually enable that BYOD. Now, I'm going to actually hop out into the...
Are you running Internet Explorer there, Matt?
Yeah, I have actually Internet Explorer. So I've actually, and it's kind of hard to see, but you can hopefully get kind of the gist of it. This is the same screen that we saw in the Windows environment. And guess what? It's all tied to that same ID that we have. And yes, I had Internet Explorer on there just because I thought it'd be kind of fun to put Internet Explorer on an actual iPad device if I don't want to use Safari, which is built in. And then, yeah, of course, it is at my favorite homepage, Bing. I always tell people you can Google it as long as you use Bing, right? So at the end of the day, BYOD is this easy to do all after simply publishing an app up in the cloud and be able to stream it down the different types of devices that we have. But something that's really important that we've been talking about a few times through this today, Tommy, and something you mentioned at the very top, and I saved kind of the best for last year, is around identity and Azure Active Directory identity and being able to put all this together. So I want to show you one last demo, or at least hop in, because there's another part of this series that we're currently doing that really focuses on that. But I want to take you through just a quick high-level tour of Azure Active Directory.
Yeah, so before we dive into Azure Active Directory, I think, you know, 2-3 years ago, you tried to launch Internet Explorer on an iPad. I think it might have disintegrated itself, right?
Yeah, the iPad might have melted.
the new cloud-first, mobile-first, cloud-first, I always say cloud-first because that's where our focus is, but mobile-first, cloud-first world that we're in that Sasha talks so much about is coming to fruition, and we're all watching it now. I didn't think that cloud would get the embrace that it has received this quickly, but I can say it's everywhere now. And Azure Active Directory is one of my favorite parts of it because that gives us ways of giving application access to third-party apps or Microsoft apps but to my domain users, and where I, as an IT pro, can control that access and also report on it. So, Matt, you want to walk us through the UI here?
Yeah, I'm just in one of our one of my Active Directory tenants, just my one of my test tenants. And Tommy mentioned here's where I could come in. I can provision the different users for that tenant. To be able to work with those things, I have groups, and I actually have applications. So one of the things you might actually decide to add to your environment are applications that are popular third-party applications, like Box, like Dropbox, like Salesforce, like CRM, like Skype, for example. You might have those apps. Well, there's over 2,400 apps that we actually can offer either single sign-on or same sign-on through the Azure Active Identity. So depending on the application workload, now I'm showing you just the gallery of kind of the popular third-party apps that are out there, but there is a whole list of just publishing your own applications. So once again, we can put them in here and give those applications all through this environment very, very easily. It's just a matter of setting up which application you want. Whenever I come into a room and I talk to folks about this, I always, you know, at the very beginning of the day, because I'll usually try to set up during break, and say, hey, what are some popular SaaS applications that you're using out there today? And they'll give me a list of 4, 5, 6, 7 of them. And I have yet to be stumped. They're all in this gallery. And of course, you know, with you have 2,400 applications to play from or choose from, you have quite a bit of a robust set of services that we can do with it. And it really enables kind of the next generation scenario of single sign on through those types of apps where a user has to be able to sign on with the same ID. Now, I also mentioned another concept called same sign-on. And same sign-on is slightly different. It is the concept of I'll have the same user ID and password, but I'm probably going to have to authenticate several times as I move through the apps. Single sign-on basically means is that once you sign in once, everything's done underneath the covers for you and for your users, so they'll never notice it. And it really depends on how you do federation, because one of the great things about Azure Active Directory, this is not a silo at all. We can actually do a hybrid deployment and have this synchronized with our on-prem AD and actually have them talking back and forth. And if you're using something like Office 365, if you go in and get the premium Active Directory, which is a bit of an upcharge on that cost, it's already there. It's already there and available for you to use and leverage these types of things. So depending on how you're approaching your problem of how you're doing applications, you might get some huge benefits around identity management. Once again, people-centric ID, the identity is the core to everything. So a couple other things that we have here, you see that directory integration if you want to do integration down to your on-prem. But we also have reports, and the reporting capabilities here are actually really, really nice. They give us some nice capabilities to find out what's going on, who's signing on, and where we can find out information about what's happening and how our directory, very similar to what we'll do to an on-prem environment. Tommy, what are some of the other areas that you really like about the Azure Active Directory environment?
Well, these reports are fantastic. I think when you look at multiple geographies, that sign-ins from multiple geographies, that tells me I've got a user who's normally in, say, New York, and all of a sudden we're seeing access from Oregon. That shouldn't happen. That would be an anomaly. And I could actually see that as an IT pro administrator. I could say, okay, I'm seeing a login here. Let me contact the user, find out how in the world they just got from New York to Oregon in under an hour, and make sure we don't have some type of breach, right?
And that's what's really nice is that I think it makes it easier to do. I would argue, although I know how to do it in AD because I've done it for years, I think this makes it easier than trying to figure out this stuff out of your own Active Directory, although it's there and works with it. So really, when you look at the Active Directory environment, you look at application management, as we started this talk, it starts with that user ID and password, and Azure Active Directory just gives you a wonderful extension from your on-prem domain environment to be able to leverage something as powerful, you know, and even do some basic things. If I go into configure here, I believe this one I have it turned on, and you saw it pop up for a second, but you actually have the ability to configure multi-factor authentication and even add another layer of security very, very easily. Now, this is stuff we can all do on-prem, right? We don't need the cloud necessarily to do this, but I will argue with folks about how easy it is to do in the cloud versus trying to stand up a multi-factor authentication solution on-prem, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to win that argument, therefore, to work with it. And then one of the things we're actually in preview with Azure Active Directory, which I'm really excited, now we're getting device registration and be able to do workplace join, which is kind of a lightweight membership into the domain environment without having to be having a domain join device to be able to do all kinds of other things, like maybe give them access to SharePoint or give them access to internal applications or data. Once again, if we can have the users register with us with a proper identity with the proper device and make them come to our data, we can really control data access, which is a whole other topic in this series, but it's another way. It all starts with that identity, all starts with a secure sign-on and identity management. Active Directory, Tommy, I have to agree with you. It's one of the huge, huge favorite things that I have of what we do in the Azure environment.
Very, very cool. I love the workplace join, how that goes across different devices, giving that granularity to the user. Are they accessing it from their known device, right?
Yep.
That's something that we care a lot about these days. So I think that was a great overview. I'm not sure we have anything else to show on this, and I know we've got another episode that goes more deeply into identity, but I think that was a great wrap map for BDI, Remote App, and Azure Active Directory. It's been a lot of fun.
Perfect. It's been a lot of fun working with you, Tommy, and to everybody out there tuning in. We just want to say thank you and have a great day.